At this time of the year, we lament and post pictures in Facebook of Valentine's candy that's replaced Christmas candy before we've even made it to the manger. Consumerism drives our society, and more often than not, it controls our lives. In our attempts to blend in, I feel we fall prey sometimes to the cycles in spite of our resentment of being rushed from one season to another. It's easy to look at retail and be resentful of their conditioning of our behavior. But it's not limited to retail, is it? Our behavior is predictably conditioned by a number of sources. If you've watched TV the last week and somehow managed to watch live TV versus DVR of your favorite shows, you haven't been able to escape the message of New Year's body conditioning. I thought I would escape the commercials that promise reduction in weight or pant sizes if I turned to ESPN, only to find Charles Barkley, former Auburn basketball player and longtime pro, once proudly proclaimed as the mound round of rebound. Here he still is, again this year, on ESPN doing Weight Watchers commercials, saying it's the way real men lose weight. I was almost moved to order the zipped waistband that ensures weight loss just for wearing it. But when the announcer said I could get not one but two for $9.99, I decided it really must be too good to be true. Wow, the money that's spent on conditioning our thinking. But in truth, the same can be said for the conditioning by various religious groups. I can't even begin to get started on the conditioning so many of us in the GLBT community have experienced in hearing for most of our lives that who we are is not created by God or embraced in God's plan for our lives. And there are other exclusive theologies or faith communities that don't welcome a diversity of paths to the holy or condition folks into thinking that God is responsible for all things bad in their lives and in the world. I can't tell you the number of times I see on Facebook the things that God is responsible for. This type of conditioning has done tremendous damage to folks. Damage that I, as a pastor, hear about every day, literally. And then there's the more innocent conditioning that so often we don't even recognize. Take our story today. It's a familiar one, isn't it? We've all seen the Christmas pageants, maybe even participated in two or three in our day. As that climactic moment happens, the parade of characters make their way to the stables we built at the front of the church. One by one they come. Mary, Joseph, the baby, sometimes a real one if the congregation's been blessed with a recent birth. The animals, and it's the donkey that's coveted because the donkey brings Mary to the stable. And then, of course, there are the shepherds. And finally, complete with rich colored costumes and Burger King crowns bedazzled with glue on fake jewels, three wise men. Voila! The scene is complete, and we sing. Perhaps as the final scene unfolds, we sing the hymn that Brenda will play for our offertory today, We Three Kings. Except, how do we know there were three of them? Where does it say that in Scripture? And where did we read they were kings? The Scripture here in Matthew said that the king, King Herod, sent them. I didn't hear anywhere that three kings went to see the baby. Where do we get these things? How, even in our faith, do we allow ourselves to be conditioned in a way that steals from us our ability to reflect on truths and find deeper meaning? I'm guilty of this myself. I can get so caught up in simply pushing the play button of old recorded messages, be they messages of who people have told me I am, or messages of what traditional church has told me who God is, and how Jesus fits into all of that. I get misdirected and distracted because I'm listening and following this conditioning. To be honest, it happens to me almost every week as I prepare to reflect with you on any particular scripture. I grew up in the church, so I've heard these stories, and I'll read a story and say, oh yeah, I remember this one. And then, when and if I'm willing to pause, to reread with an open slate in my mind and in my heart, I am blessed with a new revelation. And that, my friends, is what Epiphany is all about. During these next several weeks leading up to Ash Wednesday, Lent, and eventually getting us to Easter, we will follow others in the Christian tradition who will make this Epiphany journey. The Greek meaning of Epiphany is to manifest or to show. To have an epiphany is an revealing or an uncovering. It often requires a heightened awareness, but also letting ourselves go into faith and wonder. And so as we begin our Epiphany journey today, that's what we find these men doing. These men, conditioned to us as three wise men, were in fact what we would call astrologers. Combined with their study of the stars, they were aware of history, and they searched the past and revealed sacred texts to discern particular signs provided by the skies. In our contemporary understanding, we probably think they were crazy because they relied on the environment and stars to tell them what was coming in the world. They were keen observers of the world around them, and they were willing to take a chance on being right or wrong. Kings relied on them, sinking any edge to know who might be coming down the pike. So here they came to King Herod. We don't know how many, maybe three, maybe 300. The text doesn't say. But however many in number they were, they came to the king and told him that they heard something extraordinary had occurred because of a sign they had seen in a bright and unusual star. They had heard that one day a special baby would enter the world, and now they believed this star would lead them to that baby. Now keep in mind, these men were foreigners, Gentiles, and they were an unlikely group to find their way into the Christmas pageant scene to begin with. They could have chosen to ignore the sign. Or they could have acknowledged the sign and thought it was way too much trouble to step further into insight about what the sign meant. But they didn't do either. They were aware enough of what was going on to take note, to see that something was amiss. Something different was occurring. And so they made the choice to investigate a bit deeper into what this might mean. Well, we know the story. After they made the initial pronouncement to the king secretly met with them again and told them that, hey, once you find the child, come and tell me so that I can honor the child too. Wow, can you imagine? They're in with the king on a special mission, inside connection with the king, waited with bated breath for their return and the information that they would supply. Once they gave this valuable information to King Herod, we might assume that their life would be great. They would be valued and treated with royalty. It would be tempting. So they left King Herod. And eventually, by following that star, they found their way to Bethlehem. Now again, we've been conditioned to see this picture of them joining the birth celebration in the stable. But first of all, we know it's been a good while between the birth and the arrival of the Magi, because verse 11 says, on entering the house, not a stable. When they entered the house and saw the child with his mom, all things changed. They knelt down before Jesus. They gave him gifts they had brought, and then they returned home. And what may be the most dramatic part of this scripture is found in three words that I have completely missed over the years of reading and hearing this story. It is so easy to get caught up with new candy on sale or zip bands that will reduce weight. Did you hear the last three words of verse 12? By another road. They left for their own country by another road. A star had led them to something extraordinary, and they were now changed. Instead of returning to Herod, who they knew would not, in fact, honor Jesus, but would seek to destroy him, as he did later when he ordered all male children under the age of 2 to be killed, these men, however many of them there were, went back home by another way, indicating that they intentionally changed their travel plans in midstream. You see, once they glimpsed Jesus, they were changed. These wise men, these who had studied sacred texts and world events, saw firsthand that things had been turned on their head. This king was born in a simple baby in a barn, surrounded not by royalty, but by simplicity. Perhaps Matthew's offering a tantalizing hint about life for those of us who claim to follow Christ. Nothing is ever the same. You don't take the old road any longer. You unfold a new map and discover an alternate path. You follow a different star, far from the ones that society or pop culture puts in place. My dear brothers and sisters, all of us arrived this morning from different paths, coming from a 2013 of different memories. Some are more unbalanced than others, with disappointments or regrets. Yet we are reminded, especially on this first Sunday of a new year, that renewal is not only possible, but guaranteed. For with each new day, hope lives again. New Year's Day comes over and over again, sometimes on January 1st. But just as often, on February 10th or April 19th or August 21st or October 11th. It comes any time and any day when we acknowledge the presence of the Holy within us and among us in the presence of one another. In the United Church of Christ, we say it, you know it, no matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And you can participate in Epiphany. Epiphany in our lives comes when, as the wise men of old, we are intentional in our study of Scripture and look at the meaning that might lie within it. When we are not conditioned by faith communities who boast the greatest number in the pews or the largest budgets. But when we find meaning in pausing to read slowly and listen carefully to a still speaking God. Epiphany comes to us when we, as those men of old, observe what's going on around us and become less clueless in our communities and in our world. When we observe political powers continue to oppress the dignity and rights of all people. When hunger and poverty are growing the gaps between those with more than enough and those without basic needs. An epiphany in our lives comes. Really comes when we respond to what we know to be true, not what we've been conditioned to believe or what makes it easy to fit in. It comes when we look at the world with eyes of compassion that Jesus had. It comes when we walk with the bold advocacy that he taught us. It comes, my friends, when we get beyond ourselves to make a difference in our world. And the best part is that just like those men, even if our journey has been laid out before us and we've not always experienced success or good times, once we encounter the holy presence of God, as they did when they saw that baby Jesus, we, like them, can change course, even in midstream. We can make choices for our lives that bring liberation to us and to others. And we can follow the star that leads to wholeness to our truest selves, if we will. Epiphany, it seems to me, at least in this story, begins and ends with choices. And in between requires some focus, resilience, and downright grit. For make no mistake, the journey from Herod to God was not an easy one. These wise, newfound believers moved from the inner circle of greed and power to attaching themselves to a baby born in a barn. It made no sense for this dramatic and transformative move to be made. From an inner circle with the king to a barn baby. I've been blessed with the presence at the birth of many of my nieces and nephews. Sometimes I've joined other family members in long hours of a waiting room. Other times I've been in the room to witness fully the miracle of new life birthed in our world. It's an experience beyond anything I've ever had. Maybe you've been able to enjoy that. It will move even the toughest to tears. And whether it occurs in the surroundings of a bright hospital room or a dimly lit room attended to by a midwife, it seems to me that with each new baby, there's a new star, a light of hope, and a glimpse of God. In the coming weeks, we too will be called out to follow the star that God has put before us, the star that God has within us. The wise ones found what they were looking for by following the lighted path. If we can muster the energy and the courage to do that, no matter who we are or where we are in life's journey, no matter if we're young or older, if we're gay or straight, partnered or single, our faith or seeking what might be bigger than us, if we can trust the star that God hangs out for us, we move toward life in its fullest. The beginning of a calendar year is a time when we often reassess direction and ask directions yet again about who we are and where are we going in life. We make resolutions. We sign up at the gym again. And we vow to be better people. This year, during our Epiphany journey, I am inviting you to journey with me and to take a deep leap into the question, who am I? Perhaps once the wise men in the story today had God's light shine upon them. They began a new revelation of who they really were. A move from palace to barn and following a star that would lead them to new life, new hope, new joy God brings. Listen. To the angels sing, glory, glory, glory. Let the heavens ring. Who we are is linked to whose we are. And we are, all of us, all of them, we are God's beloved children. There is a new star leading us to a different way home, to finding our truest self. It's a new star that's beckoning us to follow. It's our star for the taking. Together, let us choose to walk in the light of God's star. This star, our star. Another one of our lectionary readings this week was from Isaiah 61. Arise, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. Arise, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. Arise, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you and me and them. So be it.